I'm sorry?
You had expressed that very well in the great love that was left behind also.
Oh, yes. Yes, let me tell you a little bit about wartime romance. A GI could walk into almost any bar in Europe and after a few minutes of casual conversation start getting physical with a woman. It wasn't because she was a nymphomaniac or a whore. It was because she was often ill-fed, hadn't seen her husband or fiancé in months, maybe years, and was afraid of dying in air raids. And Don loses his virginity in Felixstowe. He has a series of affairs before he arrives in Verviers in the fall of 1944. But he never judges the lifestyles of these women because he understands the difficult circumstances that they're living under. Now, when he arrives in Verviers, he meets a Belgian seamstress named Denise Verviers, and she's different. Yes, their relationship is very sexually charged, but when their eyes meet, they have an almost telepathic contact. They finish each other's sentences. They sip café au lait by the fireplace before retiring each evening. Don helps with household chores. They have a shared commitment. It's almost like they're married. And during the Battle of the Bulge, Verviers has to be evacuated because it looks like it's going to be overrun by the Germans, and some 56,000 soldiers are moved out of that city, including my dad's unit. But at the same time, he gets phony passes, and he sneaks back into Verviers to be with Denise. It shows his recklessness. It shows that he was constantly pushing the envelope. And yet at the same time, it shows that he loved this woman. He was willing to die for her, nobly or foolishly. And that's another part of the dual character of Don Quix. He shuns religion. He has nothing to do with religious ritual, and he lives by a secular moral code. He's basically a good guy, and yet at the same time, he's a bit of a wiseacre. We see him growing up in the Bronx, sneaking into Yankee Stadium to see Babe Ruth play in one of his last games, making off-color comments in class, getting sent down to the principal's office. He's part Eddie Haskell, part Wally Cleaver.
Do we get to know your dad, or do we get to know the fictional character, or is it a blur?
The fictional character is 90%. Of Eli Ellison. There were some factual gaps, as I mentioned, and that was one of the reasons, and to protect anonymity of actual persons, that's right. The other reason that we couldn't tell this as a straight nonfiction. But Eli Ellison is very much the model for Don Quix in almost every way imaginable.
But he was okay with that. Your dad was okay because he saw the book in progress, correct?
Absolutely. He saw the book about... he passed away in July of 2004. He saw a rough draft that was 99% of what was published. So he was writing these anecdotes, and he was very much involved in the editing. He would tell me the smallest detail, no, this is not right, we need to adjust this, we need to adjust that.
So the love story you just told, was that true? Or was
absolutely. I don't like to get into the details of point by point, but that's a very large part of the book. And he did fall very deeply in love with this woman.
The book is called Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel. It is written by our guest, Mark Stewart Ellison, with his dad, Eli Ellison. And much of the primary character of Don is actually based on Eli. So it's as Mark told us at the beginning, it's 90% fact and 10% fiction. But it is a novel. It's written as a novel. The letters, the book is filled with the letters that your dad wrote, or that Don wrote, Don, the fictional character. Are the letters true to the original letters, or did they change at all?
No, absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, the letters are absolutely true. We had some 300 mimeographed copies of some 300 V-mail letters with the censor stamp on the top and the unit information. And what I did initially was just transcribe them into the computer. And a number of them are repetitious, so we took those out and we took the most interesting ones, or the ones that would make a certain point about routine daily life and so forth.
All right, well, here's an example of one of them. This is a letter written February 18th, 1945. Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel, to give you an idea of how the food problem is in these liberated countries, I just heard that in Paris they have already consumed 30,000 cats. They sell for about $5 a piece, $2.50 for the skin and $2.50 for the stew.
Yes, that's an excellent point. I'm glad you read that letter. I usually don't read it, but I usually allude to it in my talks. I mean, that's one of the. It's amazing. That's one of the similarities between, if we want to start talking about similarities between post-liberation Belgium and World War II and Iraq today,
yeah.
One of the main similarities is that you had a very weak economy. And a lot of these people were very close to starvation. In France and in Belgium, the retreating Germans, as they were pushed back eastward towards Germany, took as much food and furniture with them as possible, leaving very little for the civilian family. In France, you mentioned the consumption of cats. Women went around in France bare-legged in harsh weather, suffering from windburn because there were no stockings. Radio men in my dad's unit hated K-rations, couldn't stand them. Don gives out K-rations to a bunch of French kids, and they kiss his hands like he's a god from heaven. And in Belgium, things are at least as bad, if not worse. Verviers is a textile town. There is 90% unemployment, 90% unemployment in the textile industry in the fall of 1944. Belgium is liberated in early September. The salaries are pitiful. Skilled male textile workers make less than a quarter an hour. That's about $15 a week on a 60-hour work week. Compare that to $100 to $125 a week that female aircraft factory workers were making in the U.S. at the same time, and you get an idea of how hard up these people were. They were rationed in Verviers some 1,200 calories a day by the central government. That number doesn't rise to 1,500 until the end of the year, 1944. You need about 2,500 to 3,000 calories a day to stay healthy. So these people had to supplement their diet with the black market, which flourished throughout Europe, but they usually didn't make it up completely. And despite this privation, the Belgians in particular opened their homes and their kitchens to Allied soldiers. Don writes home that he received so many dinner invitations in Verviers, he actually has to turn some down. They do his laundry, they mend his clothes, then they refuse payment, and GIs were paid very well in comparison to their European counterparts. In fact, there was a survey taken of British soldiers shortly before the Normandy invasion, and they were asked what their chief complaint about Americans was, and their answer became a household phrase, overpaid, oversexed, and over here.
The book is called Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel. It is a novel, but it is based on very, very true letters that were written by Mark Stewart Ellison's dad, Eli Ellison. The character Don Quick becomes the persona in place of Eli so that it protects some people who are, I guess, remain anonymous, correct?
Yes, some portraits are unflattering, and we wanted to keep them anonymous. Can I give some ordering information?
That's where we're going, yeah.
Okay. You can order Dear Mom, Dad, and Ethel, World War II Through the Eyes of a Radio Man at iUniverse.com. That's the letter I, the word universe.com, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any Barnes & Noble store. You can also call iUniverse toll-free at 1-877-288-4737. That's 1-877-288-4737. Select option 3 at the main menu. And please visit my website at MomDadAndEthel.com. That's MomDadAndEthel.com to download a real-life history, a free real-life history of the 327th Fighter Control Squadron and read other interesting stuff.
Okay, well, excellent. You sell yourself well. Go ahead,
Thank you.